Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our city council meeting on this September 22nd day. And we appreciate you being here. And as we go through our agenda, as we usually do, if you have a comment you'd want to make on any particular item, you can do it, as long as it's on our agenda. And we would just raise your hand, and we'll call on you at the appropriate time. At this point, we'll have council prayer and pledge of allegiance.
Almighty God, we gather to make decisions for our community. May we use only our best skills and judgment, keeping ourselves impartial and neutral as we consider the merits and pitfalls of each matter that's placed before us, and always act in accordance with what is best for our community and our fellow citizens. May our efforts be blessed with insight, guided by understanding and wisdom. We seek to serve with respect for all. May our personal faith give us strength to act honestly and well in all matters before us. We recognize our responsibility to the past and the future, and the rights and needs of both individuals and community. As trusted servants, we seek blessings on our deliberations and on our efforts here today. May we act wisely and well at all which we ask in your name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Council, do we have any additional items to add to the agenda or deletions? No, we'll move on. Item one in the minutes, consideration of the minutes of the work session and regular meeting of September 8, 2014. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
I so move.
Okay. Second.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under presentations this evening, we have a request from the Pink Ribbonettes to place pink ribbons in the downtown area. Let's get the duplicate, please.
We have this annually. The council looks at supporting and being a partner concerning Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and tonight we have a presentation for this. And as the memo states, you have already gone ahead and designated that purple ribbons could be up for Domestic Violence Month in October. So, as in the past, if you approve this, they'll go ahead and be willing to more than share the area of the downtown. So, for your council consideration, this is the placement of pink ribbons in the downtown area during the month of October, as requested by the Pink Ribbonettes.
Okay, Ben, would you like to speak?
Excuse me. There's a microphone up here.
Come over here so
that way they can hear you.
We can get every word. Just give us your full name, if you would, and that'll be all.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Lynn Godreau, and I am here representing the Pink Ribbonettes. We are a local breast cancer support group that has basically been in existence for over 17 years, I think, now. I've kind of lost track. I joined when I came here 7 years ago from Washington, D.C. I am proud and happy to be able to report that I am approaching my 10th year of survivorship after my diagnosis with breast cancer. So, this is a disease that probably there's no one in this room that doesn't have a member of their family or a close friend or a neighbor or a church partner that hasn't been touched by this disease. Still, one in seven women in this country are diagnosed with breast cancer, according to the American Cancer Society. So, Pink Ribbonettes works very hard, particularly in the month of October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, to offer community education and outreach, basically promoting health and awareness and trying to teach our young men and women what they need to do to be effective advocates for their health. And the best defense is early detection, and that is true to this day. So a healthy lifestyle and early detection. I'm going to, since I have the podium, though I wasn't honestly expecting to take it, I'm also going to talk to you a little bit about our big community outreach awareness effort, which is the Pink Tea. It will take place at Aiken Technical College on the 9th of October at 2:30 in the afternoon. We partner Pink Ribbonettes with Aiken Regional Medical Center, with Aiken Technical College and USC Aiken to host a free-to-the-public breast health education and awareness event. And this year, we have Cecil Heron, a male breast cancer survivor, as our guest speaker. So I encourage all you ladies to bring your husbands over and get them smart about what they need to do to pay attention and arm themselves with the information they need to take care of their health. And that's it, unless someone has questions for me.
And just a question, just thought about when you were talking. Do you have any idea what percentage of men have it as opposed to the women? I know the women are...
It is a much smaller percentage.
Yes.
And I wouldn't take a number because it would be a guess on my part. But it is a much
right.
smaller percentage, most
right.
definitely. It's not the demographic we have with women. But the thing about you guys is that you're not very good at taking care of yourself. and you're real good at feeling like something's wrong, but it'll go away, you know. Mm-hmm. Not in a month, then in 6 months, or a year, or 2 years, and then sometimes it's too late. We actually do have a male member of our Pink Ribbonettes organization. He's a regular attendee at our meetings. He's a now 17-year survivor, and he is one of those few. He's got a really powerful story to tell because he felt something, he knew it wasn't right. And he actually went to the doctor when his wife told him to. And he is alive today because he did that. So there's a lesson in this, and this is what we're trying to get out to the public, where we reach out to our young people. This is a really cool the Pink Tea event because we get the nursing schools from both Aiken Technical and USC Aiken. They man a couple of tables, put together presentations for education awareness, offer blood pressure readings and those kinds of things. And mostly, for me, as a retired naval officer, I just love seeing young people doing their thing. You know, they're so bright, and the technical competence, and the interest in learning and mastering their craft is impressive to me. So I encourage you all to try and stick your heads in if you can.
Yeah. Ms. Godwell, I think it's refreshing to have a male speaker on breast cancer, someone who is actually a survivor. And I'm going to spread the word because I haven't known of one at any event. So, you know, it's good to spread the word, educate men that, hey, you're at risk too. It can happen to you. Where on Aiken campus... Aiken Tech's campus, will this be?
Okay, now I want to say the student union.
Okay.
It's the same place we had it a couple of years
at
ago.
At the back of the building.
On the brochure.
Okay, that's at the back of the building. I know where that is.
Okay.
And that's 2:30 on October 9th.
2:30 on October 9th. That's a Thursday, so mark it on your calendars. And do round up some male representation. I'm thinking, somebody just floated an excellent idea that I believe we're going to pursue. We're going for a pink tie competition.
Oh,
that's a good idea.
And you know, everyone looks good in pink.
let me just add something to what's been said. First of all, I want to thank you for coming to Aiken and coming to Aiken to get involved with something that I think you have a passion for. I had the opportunity some years ago. Peggy Peach, who's a part of...
Peggy Peach is the founder of our
right.
Speaker Gwinnett organization, and I remember you very well. You were the guest speaker for our very first Pink Tea event.
That is correct, and thoroughly appreciated being offered to do that. But you have a wonderful organization that really is sincere about bringing greater awareness, and I just want to applaud you all for what you do. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and to everyone for your support as well.
Thank you. Council, we need to vote on this. So do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this request.
I second.
Okay, second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Joe Peggy, hi. Okay, under whole business, the first item is approval of appointments and discussion of appointees to various city boards, commissions, and committees. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, we have two reappointments tonight. One is for John Owen to the Aviation Commission, and the other one is for Trudy Boyd, a reappointment to the Community Development Committee. So for your consideration, this be an appointment of John and Trudy to those committees, reappointments.
Oh, we had three. We had Philly Sorensen, the Recreation Commission.
There's
no break in the paragraph. Missed it. Yes.
There's a
Philly Sorensen.
Yeah.
That would be for the Recreation Commission.
Okay. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Comments, discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Okay, how about the next meeting? Any nominee?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to reappoint Susie Haslip to the Recreation Commission. And also I'd like to nominate Mr. David Myers to the Park Commission.
Okay, any others?
Mr. Mayor, for the General Aviation Commission, Bill Cassani has agreed to serve again another 2-year term if we would accept him.
Okay. Any others? Okay. They will appear, those nominations will appear on the next agenda for other meeting. Item 2 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex 2.29 acres owned by Triple H Development, located at 184 Augusta Road, and zone it a general business GB. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I got my glasses on now so I can read it.
Okay.
This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Ake and certain property consisting of 2.29 acres of land, more or less, owned by Triple H Development, LLC, and located at 184 Augusta Road, and to zone the same general business. This is a convenience store, gas station, at the corner of the bypass and 421, and they would like to come into the city and have requested that annexation agreement, and the Planning Commission reviewed it and approved it unanimously. So for Council, this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex 184 Augusta Road, consisting of 2.29 acres, and to zone the property general business.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Berger.
Okay.
Second.
All right, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Okay, passes unanimously. Did you want to say something?
I just wanted to find out, is this drawing correct with the access to Hitchcock Parkway?
No, it's not part of this.
It's not part of what they're annexing for. If they would like to have access, then that would be a whole different.
Okay, that's good.
Item 3, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to rezone 1.3 acres on Silver Bluff Road at Hamilton Drive from residential multifamily, low density, RML, to general business, GB.
Yes, sir. This is, I'll read it by title. It's an ordinance to rezone certain property consisting of 1.3 acres of land located on Silver Bluff Road from residential multifamily, low density, to general business. This has come before Council on more than one occasion to rezone it. The Planning Commission reviewed the rezoning. They voted 4-2. The property to the on either side of it is already a business part of the, to the right, it's in the county, to the left, it's in the city. Council did approve this at your last meeting, and for your consideration, the second reading of an ordinance to rezone 1.3 acres on the west side of Silver Bluff Road near the intersection of Hamilton Drive from residential multifamily low density to general business.
Okay, sir. Okay. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
Okay. Discussion.
Yeah, I think we may have someone speaking to this issue. We received a letter from the neighborhood. I don't know. Greg, are you going to speak to this? Okay. It's up to the mayor.
Yes, sir. Please.
Thank you, council members, Mr. Mayor. I'm Gregory McDougall, 6 Wren Place. First of all, we do want to thank you. We've been here frequently, and at a minimum, we know that you're listening to us. So we did want to say thank you for this. Just a couple concerns that come up over and over again. I thought pretty well laid out in the letter here. Just basically, it's a quality of life issue that we're concerned about in our property value. And specifically, there's a couple, four concerns here that they talk about. Number one is, yes, this is all business right there, and that's not what we're concerned about. What we're concerned about is the single-family homes that are in back of it, in this residential area right there. That's the first piece of that, as you see. My property is the house that looks like a little triangle right under the word around. So that's mine right there. The second thing I wanted to show you, because this is kind of interesting, I went back to, if you look on the next page right here, I guess it says page 83 of 188 down here. It has photograph 1 and photograph 2 on it. So this is the property, as you're looking at the property just to the left of it. There's a little business area right there. And I took two pictures, one right there and one right there. And before I show you those two pictures, though, you will also notice that right behind photograph one is a dotted line. And I didn't point this out, but right there is a little, there's actually drainage. There's a nice drainage right there that someone put in. It was an important part of the planning when this was put in before. So that, keep that in mind as I go forward. So what I want to show you is photograph one was taken at this corner right here. And if you go down to photograph one, what do you see? Woods. There's a nice barrier between this property and our houses. So that's the first thing I wanted to show you right there. It's just a nice little area right there. Number two is another good shot that's going straight out from that property. And there's a black fence right there, which is the end of the parking lot. That's that fence right there. And then about 30 feet and then downhill, can you see that other fence? Can you see that other fence that back there? Mm-hmm. So that's about 30 feet behind there. What happens is when you look there, it drops off really, really steeply, and that's where that drainage ditch is down there also. So that's another good example, we're arguing, of this idea of a barrier in being aware of the drainage problems and issues that are there. So we're saying we like that. Okay. And then lastly, the photograph on the last page shows you kind of a nice picture, because this is in back of James's house. Right. Yeah. So, and this is really interesting because on the right-hand side, as you look through those woods right there is what specifically you're looking at. So that's the piece of property right there. And then to the left of that is the county property, which you already know what the problems are with that. But we wanted to show you, there's one side of this person's yard, and there's the other side of that person's yard. What we'd like to do is maintain a kind of again, the quality of life and personal property value. I myself have added $6,000 worth of landscaping in back of my yard. what's Peggy's last name? Ed.
Pollock.
She put up a $10,000 fence within the last month. Yeah. The question I have is, why don't the other people spend $10,000 to clean up their yard? It's a joke, okay? But I did want you to be aware of the fact that it is causing some issues among people who can have the resources to make these changes. But what we'd like to say is thank you for listening, and as you're moving forward, please keep our concerns in mind. That's what we're asking for.
Okay. But you're pleased right now.
Excuse me?
You're pleased right now.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Good. Thank you so much.
Greg, I'm not sure whether you're for this or against this. What's the difference?
Well, it says in front that we are against it, but we're listing the reasons why we're against it.
Do you have any issues with the county adjoining your property?
Yes, that has always been an issue. It's known as a donut, because what you have is a situation where we live in the city, we pay city taxes, the property next to us is city, and that property next to us, and then there's this one little area, that's why it's called a donut, where that's county. And I think they can have up to 5 trailers on that particular property. There's stuff that's dumped there from various businesses that's all along the back, and you can see kind of in that picture just a little bit. There's other when we were here before, we showed you some other specific pictures of how bad it is. So it has caused a bit of concern in our neighborhood. And for those, again, those people who know, I know you've driven around our neighborhood, the people are always out mowing their lawns, fixing things up, spending money on their property. And in my case, power washing the outside, making it all look pretty and stuff like that. So it's a very nice neighborhood. I'd like to keep it that way.
Now, what we're talking about, of course, is this piece shaded red on page 81.
Correct.
And what you're saying is you're concerned about, even more so, about what's going to happen with this county.
Yeah, all that property. So if you look out our back window, that's what you're seeing. That's why I wanted to show you photograph number 3, because like if you were just to go like that, it's like, well, that looks really nice. But if you go like this, like, that doesn't look nice. Do you see what I'm saying? So what we're saying is as you're moving forward and thinking about changing things and making things.
But in that part, in that photograph that you said doesn't look nice.
Yeah, that's kind of.
This isn't going to affect any of that. That's going to remain.
That's what we've made.
Part of, that's behind Zorba's or whatever it is.
That's
right?
Correct.
Yeah. So
we don't want it to get any worse.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Photograph 3 is where James lives, and he sees this in the back of his place?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Have you had a more intense buffer in the past?
It's 5 acres of woods until recently.
Yeah, this area right here, in between where the shed is and the shed there and the green, that was all brushes and woods, and so you couldn't see but 10 feet before last year when the property was sold and whatnot. So
it looks like there's a fence down here at the.
Yes, there's okay. A fence. That's the edge of James's property.
Okay.
That point,
correct. I think he wants to say something.
Yes. Do you want to come up, James? All right, so if there's any other questions for me, and it shows you in here where I sent out an email, talked to a couple people when I could. We meet infrequently, so when things come up, and we had America's Night Out last year, and we do stuff occasionally around the neighborhood.
This may be a pointed question, but let me ask you, what specifically or how specifically do you feel that this one parcel, shown in red on page 81, would impact any of that.
In two dimensions, because of past times that we've been here. Number one is first the visual view and the sound, because of that Silver Bluff Road right there. So there is a visual and a sound component that would affect our quality of life
issue. This lot's all wooded right now.
It's all wooded right now, correct. And the other issue, we were here a couple of years ago, and somebody wanted to do something in there. I think it was with karate or something like that. Mm-hmm. And there was a concern about who would be going in there, what time of what the hours would be, that kind of thing. So we were concerned about that also.
It appears that you all have constantly battled issues regarding what's going to go there. She had a Mrs. Brown that would come. I think she's deceased now, that lived in that area at one time. But I would hear from her. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Pat Pat Bickley was always here.
Right.
So
what would be your ideal? I mean, this private property, so people, you know, sooner or later they're going to want to use it. What would be your ideal in your mind of the use for that?
Well,
this entire county piece and the piece in question.
Okay, well, you're going way beyond what I will tell you what I would prefer. That donut hole is a real pain, and you all know that, because there's issues in terms of water and sewage and city taxes versus county taxes and city laws versus zoning versus county zoning.
But if it were to develop, what would you want to see it develop as?
Okay, so now I'm going back to this question.
Well, really for both of these, I mean, one is closer to you than the other, so that's why I asked about it. But you know, it would be unfortunate if somebody were just never allowed to use the property. So,
well, that's why in discussing with my neighbors, I said to them, well, let's look at what we thought was done well. And that's why I want to include the photographs in back of the place next door, because we think that was done well in terms of the types of businesses that are there, the buffer that they put in, which is visual and audio, and the drainage issue. Because when you step off, I mentioned in the letter there, when you step off the sidewalk, that drop goes pretty quickly. It's pretty, and I didn't measure it. I told you I didn't measure it, but it's in the order of 15 feet, I'm sure.
Least, yeah.
So you have no objections to a business going there. You just want to know the type of business that would...
The type of business and the buffer between them and us.
Okay.
Correct.
The last time we addressed this issue, it was a lot easier to empathize with the neighbors and the property values and so forth, because that donut hole essentially was in play.
Right.
The whole piece of property was in play. And
correct.
This is on the cusp, and it might not seem it, but it's a tough decision for us, because
yes.
On the one hand, we have to respect property rights and the rights of the owner.
Oh, absolutely. And that was the discussion that we had in the neighborhood association. When you look at it from the street, it's like business, right? You're absolutely right. It's business, business, business.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if there was a nice business there, as you're looking at it from that perspective. I'm looking at it from my perspective.
The backyard.
Which is my backyard. So therefore, that's why when we started talking, it's like, well, let's just not come up here and say, no, we don't like anything. Let's come up here and show you what we like.
And the only real way for us to influence any of it is to annex it. If we don't annex it, we have no influence over it. So which is what we're looking at tonight, is just annexation. I don't think there's a plan that I've heard of as far as what's going to go there.
It's a pretty rough piece. And again, if you look at it, it's a pretty rough piece of property. I don't know how this person's going to decide how to do it, but
that's why it's still sitting there.
That's why it's still sitting there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We appreciate your letting us know of your views.
Thank you so much. And yeah. Again, thank you all for listening.
Thank you,
Mr. Mayor. The karate building came up since I've been on council, and it either fronted on Oriole or Cardinal is what I recall.
Correct.
And that's the reason it was turned down, because it would dump into a neighborhood, so to speak, with the road. And this is the piece of property that is a separate entity from the other property that we considered before. Mm-hmm. This is strictly off of Silver Bluff and not off of Cardinal and Oriole. It does what the gentleman said. You do see it without a doubt. So I want to be clarifying that his Karate Kid place was off of Cardinal or Oriole. I don't remember which street, but it did dump into the neighborhood.
Right.
My name is James Minor, and I'm on Oriole. The property that we are discussing, the buffer, you definitely need a buffer. Right now, with me doing the digging and stuff, keeping the land cleared, the debris, this land been back there, I know 30 years, I've been there 30 years. And the problem I'm having now is the snakes. I'm waking up in the morning, going in the garage, snakes running across the floor. We done sealed it, they got the pest control out there, they're working with it, but you can't stop them because he's steady digging them up. There's no buffer. If you take the buffer away, Miss Bings, she's having rat problems. I mean, we're not talking small rats. And so that's what I'm dealing with, the snakes. I don't even let my grandkids go in the yard to play because we see the snake skins, these are not small snakes. And so they've been there 30 years or better. So you're taking the habitat from them. Where are they going to go? They run into the properties. So I'm not only complaining about the snakes, but what can we do about it? I don't got pest control people on it. I'm working with them, and I'm tired of walking and killing them. So I don't have no other suggestions. But we need a buffer. What do you decide to do? I'm not going to stop progress, but I'm all asking is help keep a buffer there. Maybe I stay inside the buffer for a habitat. That's all I have to say.
Have you tried? Have you called out animal control at the city or county or wherever?
We're not going to go after snakes.
They don't go after snakes.
No. The only thing about that is,
I don't blame them, but
when you see them running,
they're after me.
Okay, so you can feel. And I got spades, holes all around the yard. When you see them, you try to catch them because they get up under the air conditioning unit. You can't get to them. So you just have to sit there and wait them out. When they come out and try to trap them, you let your garage door up, you do a little errand or something, they ease in, you don't see them. I got glue traps down for rat traps. This long, I can't think of the name of them, they call them glue traps. Every now and then, I keep checking on them, I see baby trapped on because they can't get off them. So if they get inside the house, nests, the eggs and stuff, you know, it's going to be a mess out there. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one going through this if I'm killing snakes two or three times a week. So
I might suggest that you let Andrew Siders, your county councilman, know about this as well. I'm not trying to pass the buck because it's not just the county or a city, but certainly as your county councilman, he ought to be aware of that. I know his predecessor, Gary Bunker, dealt with the issue in that part of his district as well. So. And whether or not the county can bring anything to bear, I don't know.
Right. Well, it started when this property got sold, and they wanted to turn into some general business. And, well, you know the story. We've been here more than once on this deal.
Right.
It just done gotten worse. Even though there's nothing there, it's no buffer for the animals or the
snakes.
Creatures. It's nowhere for them to go, except for looking for somewhere to go. So that's my concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we hear from Mr. Calhoun, if he's here? See if he has any suggestions on how he can do something to help alleviate the issue. Putting a buffer.
My name is Mike Calhoun. I work with Woodside Aiken Realty and live at Woodside. And I've been doing this business since 1985 out of Orlando. And my intent is to do a quality project. I've been pretty successful at bringing businesses to Aiken, in the Woodside Village. We've got a lot of activity going on out there. And it's sort of the spillover from that. There's a lot of lease opportunities there, but some of the businesses I'm talking to that want to come want to own. So I sort of specifically went out and looked for properties that I thought would make sense. That, and this one has some issues. It has a slope issue, but that's sort of what my specialty's been for 20-something years, is sort of taking problems and solving them. And there is a solution to this, but I don't know who I'm going to run into and who's going to want to do it. I agree. You know, there's a built-in buffer just as part of the code. You know, general business doesn't really allow, you know, unseemly type businesses anyways. So it's, I'm not real sure what the concern is. I think the rear setback is usually, you know, 25 or 30 feet per the code anyways. So, but the intent would be is really to develop on the front part of the property. I don't want to commit to that because I don't know who I'm gonna talk to. That's the only, and I really haven't been able, I've been hesitant to spend the money on the engineering and things like that because I don't know if it's going to get you done. So, but I do have businesses that are interested in the property. And one of the ideas that I have is to actually, you know, build a two-story building at the front of the property. If I do two-story, then I sort of create a walkout basement on the first floor. That walkout basement, you know, I've got an interested party to take that I'm putting the parking behind the building instead of in front of the building. So it sort of moves everything up. And the buffer they're talking about, if I have a two-story building, it's going to block all the noise. And so, and I'd be looking at putting maybe just one row instead of double parking the front, because I'm going to have to put a retaining wall regardless. And the closer the retaining wall is to Silver Bluff, the less fill I'm going to need, so the less money it's going to cost. So it's I'm almost incentivized to move the building forward as opposed to back. So that is the solution to this. Sewer was an issue here, and I talked to the city, and it was going to cost a lot of money just to put sewer anywhere because you had to get, there wasn't even a guarantee that DOT would allow you to go underneath Silver Bluff. So I have permission, you know, through engineering at Aiken to use septic. Well, because of that, I'm sort of limited to office, you know, sort of, you know, not real busy type of uses because of that issue too. So I think they'll be real happy with what's going to be there. Sort of the unintended consequences of a property like this is if I wanted to put a house there, I could pull a house permit and take every house down, take every tree down under its present zoning. You know, and so that's the unintended, which is sort of what happened, I think, with whoever bought the property behind. Mm-hmm. It's the unintended consequences that, you know, you sort of have to be aware of. And I'm really trying to move I want to have a nice commercial business, you know, a multi-tenant building on Silver Bluff that has enough parking. And just, I just need it rezoned so I can go market it. But I'd love to answer any questions that you might have.
If council has a concern about the buffer and the neighbors have concern about the buffer, you could always put into your motion that there would be a certain distance, 30 feet, 40 feet, of undisturbed buffer back there, or if it's disturbed and they would have to plant so many trees or shrubs, again, to create that screen that you'd want. The reason behind these other properties that you see the thick brush and everything else, and I walked it the other day and looked at it myself. I went through the property that was cut down. And
you have your snake boots on?
I did not have my snake boots. I wish I had now. I must have been moving too quickly. Maybe it was that stick I had in front of me. But there, that's where all their drainage is at. That's where their detention is at. So, again, if this is the concern, you just have to say that we approve this, but there has to be an unkept buffer or, you know, something. If not, then the proper landscape would have to go in there. Again, you could create that type of buffer if you wanted to, instead of it being just clear cut.
The problems with that, on the other side, is, you know, I measured the distance of the back of this property line to every property line, and I'm like from 290 feet to, you know, the high 300s. from this property line to the other residential.
But you still have to have some area for detention, and that's going to have to be the back.
No, I understand. But it's how they do they allow open space requirements? You know, can I use it for retention? You know, how can, you know, I just want to go by what the code says. And the code builds in all those buffers already. And so, and I'm already going to have high construction costs because of the things that I have to do. So if you take away, you know, 20% of land, say you can't use it, you're reducing everything down. How do you get your money back when you spend a lot of money on development? So there's, again, it's the unintended consequences. It sounds easy to say, we're just going to take 40 feet. But then it's what you have left. And so, and I don't know the answers to that until you engineer it. But I can close on a problem until I know, and I'm just trying to find, I want to do it with whatever the code would allow, and I don't mind having a typical 25 feet of undisturbed, and I can use it as open space. I mean, I think everybody wins in something like that. That's all I'm saying.
Is there a problem with that, Mr. LaDuke?
No, and if you want, again, I don't want to delay this any more than it has to, but if there's concern on council's part and the neighbor's part, we could sit down with you and look at this to come back with, you know, it should be 20 feet, 25 feet, 30 feet, you know, what would be a good distance, and where would his drainage be at? Not that we'd be engineering the project, but to look at some preliminary concepts as to what would go in there. So you wouldn't be surprised, the neighbors wouldn't be surprised, and that we could then come back with an agreement at our next council meeting for second reading.
Well, there are a number of detention ponds, and notice I said detention and not retention. In that area, Center South has one, and if I'm not mistaken, because this has come up council before, if it is a detention pond, you can plant shrubs and trees in that.
That's what I was looking at.
And I think that's pretty definite on that, that you would, the code already says how much buffer and how many trees you'd put, and not only that, once the detention pond is built, trees can be planted in there, or shrubs that don't interfere with the operation of the pond. So actually you will gain more because of the size of the pond in relation to the buffer.
And you have to have so much open space anyways.
Right. Okay. And so I guess here we need to be careful not putting too many restrictions.
Right.
And I'll use the one at Center South, which everybody drives by, and you'll sometimes see cane growing in there, and every 4 or 5 years they cut it out. But and then the one by the Harbor Chase, I believe it is. There's three or four of them along there that if you didn't know they were there, you wouldn't see them. So I'm a little concerned about getting too specific here. By that specific, going beyond what the code requires. And maybe what we can say is that, you know, if we go ahead and decide to pass it, that the developer get with the city manager, staff, and the neighborhood and actually show them what is required to be done.
I would agree with that.
Huh?
I would agree with you.
Yeah, because I think there, until you see one of them and work with it a little bit, it becomes a pretty dense semi-jungle there.
It's definitely manageable.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think we would do it from that aspect and educate everybody to what it's going to look like. And you can look at a couple of them, like I already mentioned, that are there.
Well, again, those photos that they showed, we're showing the detention for those developments that are along there.
Yes.
That is a good suggestion. Having seen this community come before council several times, Callan, I think that doing this, I think, would help them to better understand what is happening. It's a win for you, and it's a win for them. They'll know more about what to expect, and it doesn't delay your project too much in terms of our approving it on this first reading and then getting with our staff.
Well, this is second reading.
Approving this on this reading, but also getting with our staff, too,
yeah,
to discuss with the community where this will go and the buffer that they'll have.
Yeah, I've met with the city planning many times.
But have you met in conjunction with these individuals that's here?
I haven't met with anybody.
Okay.
No,
I think that's what we need to do, and
right,
the city staff could go with you, and it And you can go take some pictures of a couple of them I mentioned, and they look like a jungle, so I think that would satisfy some part of it. And that's what they're supposed to do, don't get me wrong.
But temporarily, the jungle's going to have to be cut out to get some detention in there.
Correct, but it'll regrow back.
It'll grow back very quickly.
And this just shows that you're, as a developer, you're a good neighbor, and you want to be a good neighbor.
That's my intent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are they good snakes or bad snakes? That's really the question.
Yeah, that's the real question.
Well, are we talking? Continue this?
I think we need to go ahead and approve it, and we've already...
Modification.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the existing buffer? If we just approve it as it is, what's the existing buffer?
What's... Tommy,
it's 25.
Is it 25 feet for GB, Tommy, in rear?
It's 20, I think.
General business is...
Typically 10 feet on the side. And
right, 20 on the back.
The rear and 30 on the front.
Right.
So then you have to have so much open space.
You have to have so much open space, and I'm going to put the open space in the back.
Correct.
I mean, we're saying the same thing, and the code moves
that. Is that correct, Tom?
Yeah.
Come up to the...
Come on, Tom.
The buffer would be a 10-foot undisturbed buffer between commercial and multifamily or residential. The setback is a different story.
Right.
Setback, you can have the parking lot in the setback. So, you know, the buffer that's in the book now would be 10 feet.
And how much has to be open space? Is it 25%?
It's 20, I think it's 20. I'm not
okay,
sure.
Okay, 20%.
I think it's 20 offset.
And he has to put a detention pond in also, correct?
Yes.
But that can be covered as part of open space.
Well, yes, but I'm just saying it becomes part of your buffer if you in that particular layout.
Yeah, I think like retention is like 50% can be used as open space, not 100%. And that's why I'm saying, you know, I don't mind if you allow 100% of that detention pond or retention pond, whichever is dictated, if I can use 100% for that buffer at the same time instead of being held to the 50%, then everybody wins. They get the buffer they want. I get to use the property that I should be able to use under its present zoning. And that's all I'm trying to do is...
A buffer, we always have untouched buffers. And untouched buffers are some of the least efficient use of space and some of the least effective buffers. Oftentimes a planted buffer can use up less space and create a much better screen. And you know, when you're talking about taking up 10, 20, 30, 40 feet of land, I mean, this land is probably... $2 to $4 a square foot, and so if you're going to go however many feet wide, looks like 176 feet wide and 30 or 40 feet deep, you're taking away tens of thousands of dollars of value, whereas you could do simply that 10-foot buffer that Tommy mentioned and just require a planted screen, and you actually get a more effective screen. These nice folks wouldn't be able to see this development necessarily at all. With a fast-growing Leland cypress or something like that, you can screen it entirely, so you wouldn't be able to tell there's a building there. But that's really a more efficient and effective buffer. It uses less area, and it actually does screen, because untouched buffer just means they didn't do anything. If there weren't trees there, they didn't plant them. And so you can see whatever you could see. So, I mean, my feeling, I actually agree with Reggie and I think Leslie on this, that I'd vote to annex it under the GB classification and then try to have everybody have that meeting to explore those options to make sure that the neighbors have their views have been included in whatever the ultimate plan is.
Well, I think that would be the right thing to do because... the city manager staff can send out an official letter to the neighborhood just like we do in other neighborhoods, and Mr. Calhoun and Mr. Paradise can present, you know, what the code requires and go through the options and, plant some wax myrtles, and in a year's time, they'll hide it.
Yeah, if you had a 20% open space, mm-hmm. and I looked at the property 1.3 acres, and the fact that you got 230-some feet in the back, that'd be almost 50 feet a property just in the back for open space.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. I mean, we can accomplish.
So I think we'd accomplish everything everybody wants.
As
just
as
the fact that we have to have open space.
Work.
Right. Yeah, we just need to do it.
And how that open space would be used for detention and other things, that's the things we could work out.
Exactly.
But I think neighbors could be happy that there's going to be plenty of open space. And again, that's what was behind those other buildings that you were taking pictures of, that you said there's a fence and another fence. There's detention back there.
Okay. Okay. We've got a motion in a second, so show of hands for approval. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 4, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to reduce the balance of the Aiken Corporation consolidated loan with the City of Aiken.
Yes, I'm going to read it by the title. It's an ordinance to reduce the balance of the Aiken Corporation consolidated loan with the City of Aiken. We discussed this at the last meeting. Their loan currently is $328,000, and we are going to go ahead and reduce that by $72,400, which is what they had in two properties, one at, well, actually several properties. There's three of them, 910 Alfred, 1407 Aldridge, and 1143 Alderman. And then if you approve this tonight, the new consolidated loan balance would be $256,400. So for your consideration, this is second reading of an ordinance to reduce the balance of the Aiken Corporation consolidated loan with the City of Aiken by $72,400. And the other thing that was discussed at the Aiken Corporation meeting is they'd like to extend that loan from 2 to 5 years. That way, if they had a little bit longer time, if you called the note, it just allows them to go ahead and do some projects with that additional money. 2 years, sometimes it's not enough time to go ahead and really loan out the money to do projects, to build things, but 5 years give them that a lot of amount of time.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have a motion in a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Discussion?
Yeah, how long have they had the 2 year note now?
Oh, 10, 15 years at least.
So why is it so important that it go from 2 to 5?
If you'd want, I could let Mr. Cunning, he's the one that suggested he could come forward. I could speak for him, but I'd rather he speak for himself.
He can do that very well.
At Cunning, 113 Mulberry. The 2 years, if you loan the money on a construction project, it takes you 8 months for a year to build something, then to get something sold. If we'd have done this with our Carlton Park houses, I'd have been coming back here asking for a renewal, because we haven't been able to sell them. I actually could live with 4 years. I just think 2 years is not, it's just not enough if you're going to have a loan fund. Like, part of this money we used for the apartment land. We did 5 year loans to get apartments built on the second levels. We loaned the money, got it paid back, but we did it over a 5 year period. When you're loaning money to get development, it's very difficult to do it on a 2 year basis.
I read the Aiken minutes, the Aiken Corporation minutes every month. I'm not aware of anything you're doing that's going to use the money for anything.
Well,
so that's why
we've been trying to see whether we want to build a couple houses in Carlton Park, but to be quite candid about it, we've put that on hold until it's studied. We'd probably go to Elmwood or do the Edgewood. We could do that. We've also had some inquiries again about getting some apartments done down on Lawrence Street. Some people want to do that again. I just felt like if we've had these funds that generated a lot of business in Aiken, one thing we're saying is if you want to keep doing that, and it's a loan, but I just felt like it didn't make any sense for us to say 2 years, Dick. That's, if you want to do four, that's fine, but 2 years isn't long enough. I mean, for a loan fund, to be honest with you. I mean, we've had the money for 10 to 15 years.
Well, if I saw any activity, I wouldn't have asked the question, but it's just sitting there, so. Okay.
We've tried to do some things, but we've put it on hold, Dick, because of the issues with Carlton Park and whatever. So.
And I'm not sure I can see it coming off hold. I hope the city doesn't get back in the housing business until the economy improves.
If the city wants, as part of the plan for Carlton Park, says you want us to build two homes, I'll bring it to the committee and we'll vote on it.
Okay.
Thank you, Pat. Okay, we've got a motion and second for approval. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Opposed? One. Okay. Passes. First reading under new business, first reading of an ordinance to amend concept plan for property owned at University Healthcare System located at 1021 Silver Bluff Road. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, I'm going to read this by title. It's an ordinance amending the concept plan for property owned by GMK Associates Incorporated or University Health Service Incorporated located at 1021 Silver Bluff Road. They have been before council on several different occasions, this property. The most recent was in 2009 when council approved three buildings totaling 72,000 square feet. They had not to amend that and just have one building for a healthcare facility. And Planning Commission reviewed this request and unanimously approved it. And there were several different conditions, and I'm just going to read them very quickly. Concept plan sketch and narrative be updated to clarify the future development phases, interconnectivity of roads for future development, and designation of open space. Two, the traffic study be updated to address the concerns raised by the city's on-call traffic engineer and any requests of SCDOT to include future development in the calculations. Three, all the parking be situated on the lot's interior, not along the Silver Bluff Road side. Four, all access to Silver Bluff Road for the 7.4-acre parcel shall be from the driveway shown on the concept plan, and any existing driveways shall be closed. Five, the planting strip along Silver Bluff should be 35 feet deep instead of the 25 feet deep because of the overhead power lines. Six, any undisturbed 10-foot buffer be installed adjacent to residential property. Seven, the detention pond be 25 feet from any residential property lines or residential zoning districts and screened from residential property and residential zoning districts by 25-foot undisturbed buffer. Eight, that minor changes to the building and site may be approved by the planning director, including changes that would preserve trees. Nine, that waivers of the provision of the access management ordinance requested by the applicant to allow the location of proposed driveway to be approved. That the conditions on the annexation in 2006 of a northbound deceleration lane on Silver Bluff Road be deleted unless required by SCDOT. 11, that there be only one monument sign with a base of brick of the same type and color used on the building facade, and that the planning director approve the size, location, and design of the freestanding sign, and the design and size of the wall signs. And last, that the owner execute an agreement listing the conditions of approval, and the agreement be recorded by the city at the RMC office within 90 days. This is first reading of the ordinance for the new concept plan for this property at 1021 Silver Bluff Road.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
A second.
Okay. Discussion? If not, a show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 2 is the first reading of an ordinance to annex 475 Town Creek Road, zone at RS-15, residential single family.
Yes, I'll read it by title only. It's ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of vacant property owned by Kathy Harris and to zone the same residential single family. She owns a 0.83-acre lot at 475. The Planning Commission unanimously approved that we go ahead with this annexation and to zone at RS-15. So this is first reading of the ordinance to annex 475 Town Creek Road owned by Kathy Harris and is zoned at RS-15 single family residential.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second.
Do we have a second?
Yes.
We do. Discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3 is the first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding sign visibility and trees.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending the City of Aiken ordinance regarding sign visibility and trees. We're going to probably get tired of seeing this one coming back. This is the one that a couple of years ago we had. Then back in June, we discussed again. In July, immediately, we had a couple of issues that came up with it. The Planning Commission rediscussed it. and they have come up with a couple of changes, which are listed on the second page, on page 132 here. That basically says if the removal of a tree results in the separation of more than 40 feet between small trees and 60 feet between large trees, the planning director may allow the removal of the, on the condition that additional vegetation approved by the planning director is planted along the area of the tree removal. And also talked about freestanding signs when this is at the side yard or rear yard versus the front yard. The Planning Commission, after looking at that, did approve this unanimously, and so for council consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding sign visibility in trees.
Okay. We have a motion and second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes. Item 4 is the fourth. Is the first reading of an ordinance to approve the sale of 1143 Alderman Street Northeast.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance approving the sale of 1143 Alderman. We have an offer on this property for $70,000 or the appraised value of the property, whichever is less. Council at the last meeting had one for 1407 Aldridge. On first reading, it's not before you tonight because, again, it said a certain price, in that case was $72,000 or whatever the appraised property is. So I felt that until we got the appraisal, I mean, that appraisal might come in at $65,000, which may be fine that we want to sell it at that amount. But I didn't want you to think it's going to be sold for $72,000 and then find out a few weeks from now that we're really selling for $65,000. So that appraisal is scheduled, I believe, for October 3rd. And once we get that appraisal, then we'll bring back that ordinance on second reading. And same thing here. This is first reading. Once you pass on first reading, we'll then have them get that appraisal completed. And then we'll bring it back on second reading once we have all that information. So right now it's at $70,000 or the appraised value, whichever is less. We're very happy with that. This would be the second property that hopefully we'll be able to sell. And so for your approval, this is first reading of an ordinance to sell 1143 Alderman Street to Michael and Barbara Couch for $70,000 or the appraised value of the property. And we'll bring that back once we have the appraisal.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
I think Michael is in the audience.
He is.
Petitions and requests.
Mr. Mayor.
I'm sorry.
The potential owners in the audience. Michael's in the audience. Raise your hand, Michael.
Very good, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Number one. I don't have this. Under petitions and requests.
Okay. The first item under petition request is the approval of an SPCA program. It's called TNR trap and then return after they've been cats been sterilized. I'm just going to introduce it, then I'll ask, I guess, Barbara to come up. You might as well come up while I'm introducing it, Barbara. For years, we have had a problem citywide with feral cats. About 250 to 300 cats come in every year. Unfortunately, because they are feral and they're really not adoptable, we have to, by law, keep that cat for about 7 days, depending if there's holidays or not, but it's a minimum 7 days. And then we, I think almost 100% of the time, we then euthanize that cat and have to go through the cost of the euthanization and the burial. For the city of Macon, it costs around $82. Barbara's going to get into it's not really affecting, being very effective, because once you do it with one cat, then another cat comes into the colony. When I was up at Edgefield County, I saw this as a countywide thing, and it's not getting better. And so the SPCA has looked at a number of programs. We feel we have a program here that will be a way to very humanely deal with the population that's out there. But even more importantly, not as important maybe, but as a city manager and I look at finances, it's actually will save the city money and there'll be less calls and you'll get less calls of cats yowling and siding and doing other things. So with that, Barbara, go ahead, and she has a presentation that you could see in your screen here, or you could see it up on that screen. So we have we're not ignoring you, we're looking here at the screen here
in front
of us.
That's okay. All right, I'm Barbara Nelson, president of the SPCA. Trap, Neuter, Return is the program we're going to talk about tonight. Many people in this audience are probably familiar with it, but just in case you're not, let me go through it. This program is an identify of why we need to do Trap, Neuter, Return. And essentially what Trap, Neuter, Return is a program where community cats can be defined as cats that are feral, which are cats that are essentially born in the wild, cats that the community is feeding and taking care of, but nobody wants to own them. They're just free roaming cats. And the present program that we have right now is simply to trap these cats, bring them to a facility, in this case to the city of Aiken, it's the SPCA. Because they're unadoptable, they are, after the holding period, they are euthanized, and then they're buried. The problem with this program is that it doesn't work. And over the years, these cats continue to increase, the calls to animal control continue to increase, and the injuries to staff to take care of these cats, because essentially they're little tigers, continues to increase. And this is not a problem unique to Aiken. This is a problem that's all over the country. Now, there are... Okay, so Stuart, what happened? Here we go. All right. So, finally, people started talking about, okay, how can we fix this problem of the increasing population of cats, community cats? And the answer became, well, let's study and research why they're increasing. You know, why is it not working that if you take a cat and take it away from the neighborhood or its colony, because they live in colonies, and these colonies can be anywhere from 2 to 10 or 20 cats, why is it not working that, you know, they're not disappearing? You would think that they would. That's what everybody thought. Well, the reason is because there's something called the vacuum effect. And this next slide, I believe, it doesn't explain the vacuum effect. What it explains is what a community cat is. And I explained this earlier. It's a free roaming, it's unowned, it's feral. This slide shows that the population of cats continues to increase and that we are euthanizing more and more and more of these cats. But why is it a problem? It's because the calls to animal control are coming because people are sick and tired of the yowling, the spraying, the fighting. They don't like to see these cats get hit by cars. They're getting injured. The kittens are full of fleas. They're full of disease. You look at a dumpster and you've got cats all over the dumpster. They're a danger to your pets. They're certainly a danger to the wildlife. And as a former wildlife biologist, I can tell you I don't like to see large cat colonies because the bird populations suffer from that. They're not vaccinated. They're smelly. They're a problem. They're a serious problem. Right now, on average, for the city of Aiken to bring a cat into the shelter, have us hold it for the legal time period, which is a minimum of 5 days, all right? But the Attorney General passed an opinion because of a petition by the mayor of Blackville. And that opinion said that the day that the cat comes in cannot be counted as part of its euthanasia period or its holding period. And the day that it's supposed to be euthanized cannot count. So say a cat comes in on a Friday, and it has to be 5 business days, incidentally, too. So a cat comes in on a Friday, that doesn't count. So the cat is there with us all day Friday. Then you have Saturday and Sunday, which isn't necessarily a business day for a lot of places. It can be for us at times, but you don't necessarily have an officer on call to be able to return a cat or do anything else with it or any kind of an animal. Then you go into the Monday, Tuesday, and pretty soon you're eating up those days, and then the day it's supposed to be euthanized doesn't count, and holidays don't count. So we could be charging the city $10 per day per animal up to 7 days. And then there's euthanization fees and disposal and burial fees on top of that. So on average, you're spending $82 a cat. Now, the problem is that you're spending $82, but you're not solving the problem. So what we are suggesting is that instead of spending $82 per cat, that we spend $60 per cat, bring the cat into the shelter, have it sterilized, ear tip it so it can be identified, give it a rabies vaccination. The rabies vaccinations, research is showing, are going to last somewhere around 5 years, which is about the lifespan of a feral cat, and then return that cat back to the colony. Now, this is the part that we need to understand. The reason why the euthanasia idea doesn't work is because when you pull a cat out of a colony, that creates a vacuum. Another cat will come in there, a fertile cat, or assuming this colony is all fertile. So you pull a cat out of there, it's just like squirrels. You take a squirrel out of your yard, if it has a habitat, it's going to come right back because that niche is there, and it wants to be part of that colony, and it wants to reproduce. So taking it out and euthanizing it, there's all kinds of cats out there. They're just going to come right back into that colony. However, if you maintain the structure of that colony, you had 10 cats in there and you sterilize all of them, they will repel any other cats that are trying to come into that community. And over time, because these cats only live for on average 5 years, 7 years, maybe as an old community cat, that colony will decrease in size. And we'll show some statistic here, a couple of case studies that were done, one very close to us in Spartanburg, that proves that. And I believe there's at least one or two members of the audience that have dealt with community cats, have had them sterilized, and then have seen that that population reduce itself over time. So the program is not a save the cat campaign. What it is really a let's humanely figure out a way to reduce and eliminate some of these cat populations. So are there too many cats in your neighborhood? Probably. Anytime you drive around the city of Aiken, if you're driving around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, which not many of us are doing, but you may be awakened at night because you hear all this yelling and screaming and the cats are fighting and they're trying to reproduce, then you'll know that the cats are there. But cats are very secretive, so if you're traveling about during the day in your neighborhood, you probably aren't seeing these cats, but I guarantee you they're there. They're living under your houses, in the crawl spaces, they're living in the dumpsters. They're there someplace. You're just not seeing them during the daytime. So as I said, the TNR program has been the only proven program to reduce these cat colonies. It stops the reproduction, it reduces the population over time, and it lessens the predation on wildlife. And the neutering also improves some of that behavior. So all that yowling and screaming that was going on because they're trying to reproduce is going to lessen because there's no reason for them to be out there fighting with each other all the time. They're not trying to mate with somebody else right now. Let me also note that part of this program, the kittens that are in this program, if they're 12 weeks of age or younger, will not be returned to the colony. They cannot be given a rabies shot until they're over that age, so we don't want to put them back into that colony. And it's also not very humane to return those little kittens back in there. Any of the kittens that come in, we'll evaluate, and if we can put them on the adoption floor at the SPCA, we'll do that. All right, now here's a case study. This is Newbury, Massachusetts. This is one of the first TNR programs that was ever put into practice in the United States. So in 1992, on the Merrimack Riverbank in Massachusetts, there was 300 cats, and they were a big problem. Finally, by 1998, they had done 100% sterilization of these cats. By 2007, there were only 6 cats on the Merrimack Riverbank. Let's take a look at something a little closer to home. This is Spartanburg, South Carolina. They started their program in only 2012. And they are very enthusiastic about the program. What this chart shows is that When the program started in 2012, after 1 year, the calls to animal control had been reduced by 50%. Now, I would say that, and then the TNR, the animals that were TNR'd, okay, the animals that were actually picked up, sterilized, and brought back into the colonies, they were also reduced by not 50%, but more like 40-something percent. So in other words, the population declined dramatically. Now, the reason that population declined dramatically in this case, that differs from the Massachusetts case, is that in this case, Spartanburg really targeted these colonies. And it's very important that the colonies, that you try as fast as you can to get 80 to 90% sterilization, as fast as you can. If you just sort of shotgun it and say, okay, we're going to do one cap per colony, that doesn't really work because you've got too many that are fertile. So it just makes sense, it's common sense, sterilize as many as you can in those colonies. And that is where, if Council passes this program tonight, that we're going to need the help of the community to work with animal control to identify these colonies, and then there will be a very strong targeted effort made by animal control and hopefully by people that are interested in these cat colonies to get these cats trapped and do this program very quickly. All right, in 2013, when we went back to all of the statistics that we keep at the SPCA, we identified that there were 226 candidates that were available for TNR. In 2014, if you pass this program, what I'm expecting, because of this meeting here tonight, because it's been in the newspaper, we will have more of a community awareness, and animal control will be getting more calls to pick up cats. So I'm going to predict that let's go ahead and figure out how we're going to budget for 300 cats. So how much is the TNR going to cost? Again, our charge is going to be $60 per cat to sterilize, ear tip, give a rabies vaccination, and versus the $82 per cat that you're currently paying to not solve the problem. We have Chrissy Miller, our development director at the SPCA, is here. She has been very active in grant writing, and we have secured some money in a grant from PetSmart Charities to help with some of the costs of this should we go beyond the 300 cats. Some of this I've mentioned already. The average lifespan is 3 to 5 years. Rabies vaccine, on average, can last up to 7 years. Removes all those reproductive urges, which causes all the animal control complaints. And we're only going to be releasing veterinarian-approved cats. All right, so if an animal comes in and it's obviously sick, it's going to be euthanized. I mean, quite honestly, we're not going to turn sick cats back out into the environment. So what do we need to move forward? Naturally, we need City Council's approval for this. We need the Environmental Control Officer's cooperation, which they work very closely with the SPCA right now. And then we need the cooperation of the community to identify these colonies and possibly even help return these cats to the field. Questions?
Sounds very good to me. We can help the cats reduce in population, plus keep the money down as far as the city's concerned. Less money
right.
Spend it.
In the long term, if this works, if we do this right, it should reduce the cost of animal control for cats. Mm-hmm. At any rate.
So what we did last year was 226 cats at an average of $82 a cat. Did I read that one?
There was 226 cats that we identified as being
okay.
That could have been part of the TNR. So yeah, you're essentially correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, we euthanized 220-something cats.
Yeah, you euthanized at least 226.
Okay.
At least.
So this, even if you did 300 cats, you're reducing the unit cost per cat. So really, it's not a great deal more expenditure, even though you're dealing with more subjects.
That's right. And it's already, you're right, that's exactly right. And the money's already in the budget. Nobody's asking for any more money. The money's either in the budget for animal control or it's in the spay-neuter program.
And the kittens that you take in, that are too young for rabies shots. You keep them till you can give them the shot and then ultimately put them out for adoption?
If we believe that they're healthy enough for adoption, then yes, they'll be put on the adoption floor. There's no way we can save them all. We know that.
Right.
But, you know, we try and get the kittens on the adoption floor.
Okay.
Are there any maladies the cats have that could be transmitted to humans?
I wish... Is Dr. Bissell here? Okay, great. I'm not a veterinarian, so...
Fleas,
all of that kind of thing. Whether there's diseases that... zoonotic diseases that can be transferred to humans. Certainly rabies. You know, if you're bit by, a cat, you get rabies. But other than that, I'm not aware of that. We would need a veterinarian to answer that question.
The one thing about feral cats is they avoid humans.
They do.
You're probably not ever see them.
Yeah, and the thing is, the answer is to reduce the cat population. So the exposure, the health problem would be less should this program work.
You know, I never knew what a feral cat was until we discussed this issue the last time.
Yes.
But Roger, I got emails from people that just love their feral cats, and they fed them every day, and they had no objections to them coming around, and I got some pretty strongly worded emails to leave the feral cats alone. Is there a community that does not think this is a good program?
There's always somebody that's going to object to something. I would say that... I'm a wildlife biologist by career. I was. And this is where you and I talked in the very beginning last year, I wasn't a big believer in TNR for the very reason that I wasn't sure whether it worked or not. To me, it was just words out there. So, and I don't want to see cats killing all the songbirds. I really don't. But TNR does work. And there is no alternative. Nobody has come up with an alternative yet. So is somebody going to object to the TNR program? Probably. That's where it's important that we educate the public on the fact that this is the only known solution, that it costs less per animal to have the solution implemented.
This doesn't take away anybody's, yard feral cat. This just prevents them from making more of the feral cats.
Sure.
So they'll still have their little pet that walks in from the...
I understand. I just made my comment because there are some people that don't object to feral cats. And
yeah, there are definitely going to be people that if you say, okay, I'm going to trap this cat, they're calling you because they have a problem. So animal control traps the cat. And then animal control explains to the individual, well, I'm going to bring it back. And they're going to say, no, I don't want this cat back. It's causing all kinds of problems around here. Sure. And that's where we need the education. A lot of these bad behaviors that these cats have are because they're trying to reproduce, that their hormones are flushing. And quite honestly, if there comes a cat that is continuously becoming a problem even after it has been sterilized, then that's the one that you take out of the population.
Probably the $30,000+ you're getting from the county, is that used for just their total animal control program?
We don't get $30,000 from the county. What the county has is very similar. In fact, it's almost exactly like the city spay-neuter program, that the city budgets $30,000 for spay-neuter vouchers for those that qualify, which are low-income people. The county, Aiken County, did... A year and a half after you people on City Council passed it, they passed their voucher program too. And that is for county residents that qualify according to HUD qualifications.
So you've already been to them with the spay-neuter program?
The county is a whole different world. they use up those vouchers very quickly, and they are not yet at the government level funding spay and neuter just for TNR, but they are working with individuals and with private organizations to find where these colonies are and get them fixed. But they're not actively funding a trap neuter return program. They are, in general, just using their spay-neuter vouchers for anybody that comes
in. So my question is, you've already been to council, county council, to...
No, not anymore.
Our records
no.
speak to
them. Okay.
Can you come up to the podium, please?
Please.
And just tell us who you are and...
Yes. I'm a cheerleader voice. Uh-oh, I'm going to disappear back here.
That's okay.
I'm Hoya DiStefano, and I've been working with the county and its animal control, animal welfare, animal advocacy issues since early 2009. And I am one of the founders of the FOTUS organization, and I have been working with county government, county animal control, the animal shelter, the new animal shelter for all these years, and with the SPCA very closely because shelters are a symptom. They're not a solution, and the problem is numbers. And a big part of the problem of numbers, the county has already heard from Dr. Bissell, and we've been working for about a year now to educate and get the county focused on making a new policy towards community cats, free roaming cats. Dr. Bissell has been very helpful in plugging a number of the players into the network. And yes, there is a $30,000 voucher program, much like the city has a $30,000 voucher program. But there's been an aggressive fundraising effort and major donors that are working on taking care of cat colonies where there are people who are sponsors of cat colonies. So if people have a cat colony that they love and have worked on trapping them, the county has so far not taken a stand because animal control officers will still get calls, and their obligation at this point is to pick up those animals because they are perceived to be nuisances and bring them in, and they are euthanized. But as I said, there's such an animal welfare, animal advocacy push now with the new shelter and all of the volunteers and the community attention that I think that the county and the city can work very well hand in hand in terms of addressing animal overpopulation and being one of the cutting edge, leading edge public-private collaborations and partnerships towards addressing companion animals in a humane and economical ways. I really don't think that you're going to have a problem. There's enough information out there. I do not think you're going to have a problem selling this program to our community. We have animal-loving community. We have an economy that's based on animals in a variety of ways, certainly not the least of which is our horses, and whether our horses are barns, and whether our barns, there are barn cats. I think that that the county is probably shortly after, should you choose to adopt this model, I think the county will be right behind you, if that answers the question.
It does. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Any other comments from the...
Yes, sir.
Please come up.
Okay.
I'm John Favilio at 313 Live Oak, and I'm a cat and dog lover. But this is just in response to Councilman Duar, what you can tell the friends of yours you've been getting emails from, because I know a lot of people that like their feral cats too. And this program will really help them, because if they get picked up under the regular program, there's a 90% chance that they're going to get euthanized. Under this one, they're going to get sterilized and brought back, so that they'll have those cats, and if you sterilize them and give them the shots, they're going to have the full life of that cat. So they extend more of a chance of keeping the cats that they like under the new program, or this proposed program, than the present program.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Anyone else? Let's see.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name's Eileer Brisbane. I'm at 1220 Evans Road. For 37 years, I've worked at the University of Georgia Savannah River Ecology Lab. Our job is to deal with animal populations. Recently, the term mesocarnivore has become fashionable. That means medium-sized carnivores like cats and raccoons and possums and now coyotes. And the principles of controlling these populations are all about the same. I would support what Barbara Nelson has said, and you're certainly going to save money, but I am concerned that you might get the idea this is a magic bullet, that this bullet isn't going to work. And let me tell you the places where it didn't work. Rome, Italy, tried trap, neuter, release, but found that despite TNR, 21% immigration came into the TNR colonies simply because people kept releasing their pet cats. Tucson, Arizona, found that by doing TNR, they increased the food supply to coyotes. Coyotes eat cats. And by setting up TNR colonies, the diet of coyotes changed from 13% house cat to 42% house cat. Austin, Texas has a real problem at its TNR sites of coyotes zeroing in on those protected colonies. So you need to get people, and I'm not sure who was on your committee, but you need to have people who are experienced at that. And with that regard, you have an internationally renowned cat control person in the form of Selena Stillman, who just came in. She, I guess it would be no exaggeration to say, was almost single-handedly part of the crew that got cats controlled in Bermuda. But Bermuda is surrounded by water, so there's no immigration of cats. And once you get the TNR established, you don't have more feeding in. We're not surrounded by water. And we have a sea of cats out there that are going to keep coming in. And you see Spartanburg 2013, 2014. What is going to happen in 15, 16, and 17 when these older cats get older? You're going to have to keep removing them, or as Barbara Nelson said, educate the public and make it expensive or hard for them to drop them off. Thank you.
Thank you.
I can understand where the coyotes would be attracted by a number of cats, but the Roman issue is a little bit cultural and historical, if you know that. That's a little bit different.
Well, it's the idea is that people in Rome like cats, so if the colony starts to die down, they'll replenish it by letting more cats.
They say they owe their survival to cats.
Yeah. But by the way, the one place where I live on the escarpment of Evans Road on the edge of Hitchcock Woods is essentially feral cat free. And that's because of coyotes in Hitchcock Woods. There are virtually no barn cats that I know of in Aiken Estates on the edge of Hitchcock Woods. And the coyotes have taken care of that.
Thank you, Larry. Anyone else?
I want to hear from the...
Who else would like to speak?
There's somebody.
Dick, did you say?
There's somebody right there.
Okay, Larry.
I'm Larry Gleason, and I live in Aiken Estates, a bit further from where that gentleman lives, because I'm behind Mitchell Shopping Center. And I didn't know that the city was planning or even looking at this project, but I have been maintaining one of these colonies since 2009, and I started off with 20 ferals that were trapped, and they were neutered and released. There was actually a 21st one. The veterinarian said no, it had issues, so it was put down. And the population now sits at about 10 to 12 almost any given day, and that's a 40% reduction of the colony in the last 5 years. There have been other cats that try to come in, and they are rejected by the colony. I've got maybe four right now. If they come in and want to feed and they behave themselves, I'll let them feed. Otherwise, I'll take the food up from them. The same thing goes with possums and raccoons. They can be a problem, but what you got to do is monitor your food supply and take it up for a few days and only let the cats eat, and you don't have that problem. In fact, I even had a fox come in a couple of times, but I haven't seen any coyotes, not in my end, down at Mitchell Shopping Center anyway. It seems that, and in 5 years, I have not had a problem with any kitten litters. That was a big problem. I had five litters to contend with at one time because it just kept building and building and building. But now in 5 years, I have not had a single kitten in the area. I think the only cats that have been coming in, I think it's been four of them, they've all been males, and I think they tried to hit on the females and found out the females just weren't interested anymore. So they come in and eat, and then they leave. And they might come back a month or two later because they're hungry, but as they behave themselves, I'll let them eat. Otherwise, they don't get to eat. So I think the program will work from my experience with them. So if anybody has any questions, throw them.
Thank you, Larry. Anyone else? Okay. Barbara, do you have any other comments?
No.
Thank you for this review and what you're doing there.
Move for approval, Mr. Mayor, of this request with fat neuter.
Excuse me?
I'm moving the motion.
Okay.
I second.
We have a second also. Any discussion? Council? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Item two is a request to proceed with the pilot project to streamline city council meetings. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, at the last council meeting, you heard a presentation concerning televising the council meetings. So Tim O'Brien is here. I believe Tim is going to go ahead and make a presentation on this. And if council wants to go forward with it, since there was no funds in the budget, we would be taking the money from the contingency fund. So for your approval tonight, as a request to proceed with a pilot program to stream city council meetings for 6 months using Aiken Communications.
Okay. Tim, would you like to speak?
Go ahead. Tim O'Brien, 60 Redwood Drive. I had not planned to make a presentation. I'm glad to answer any questions. We had a pretty lengthy discussion, but essentially, just to summarize, we're going to put three cameras here in the ceiling and have some switching equipment in the back, then make the live video available via the internet on phones, tablets, PCs, internet-connected televisions, and then within 24 hours, it would be available on the city's Channel 4 through Atlantic Broadband, and thereafter on the city's website, chaptered. So if you're interested in feral cats, you could go straight to the feral cat video, or if you're interested in a particular annexation issue, you could navigate directly to that. So if you have any questions, I'm glad to answer them.
All right. Is it correct to say this is a six month
yes,
file period, and Aiken Standards providing a lot of the equipment? And
the equipment will be provided, that is purchased by Aiken Standard. We have that in house, and really the purpose of the 6 month experiment is to we will be able to evaluate viewership. We'll be able to see how many people are watching it on a given time period, and kind of get some averages and decide whether it's something the people of the city are interested in.
Do you see any point in time where we can take an interim look at this and maybe discover something that we need to do to improve it? Or would you just think we need to wait for 6 months and study the data?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this experiment is a partnership. Just as we talked about, partnering with the city on the equipment is ours. The manpower, you will help us to pay for some of that manpower.
But part of the partnership will be continuous input. What do we need to do to improve it, to make it a valid experiment as we go through? And then the biggest evaluation, obviously, would be at the end of the experiment. But yes, there's a lot of flexibility as we go.
I think we've probably heard a couple of issues that are obvious candidates for the Aiken report, the feral cat issue, and certainly the streaming of council meetings to keep the public informed.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for motion?
Very good. Yes, motion.
I move we approve pilot project to stream city council meeting.
Thank you, Tim.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Okay.
Philip Ward.
Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Item three, requests for approval of a memorandum of understanding with Fripp Island Property Owners Association. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yeah, we've had this informal agreement with them for many years, and we just felt it would be good to let council see what this agreement consisted of and then give you the opportunity to approve it. After looking at this agreement, it's come to our attention. Didn't want to make one small change. If you could look at it under goals and objectives, it says that we would be providing, under goals and objectives, Wi-Fi capabilities. Currently, we do not have Wi-Fi capabilities. We do have some internet capabilities, and so therefore, that would be one change, or the only change that we'd like to go ahead and make after a little careful review. Again, we have these types of agreements with other communities, and we think that this would be, again, something that we'd like to continue. And so for your consideration, this is approval of a memorandum of understanding with Fripp Island Property Owners Association for them to be able to use our emergency operations center in case they have an emergency, certainly a hurricane or something of that event.
Okay. Minus the Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi.
Okay, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Discussions?
I just got a question. It seems to me that having Wi-Fi in that facility would be a good idea.
We just don't have the capabilities right now. At some point, we hope to have them.
It wouldn't be hard, though, could it?
And we've got it close, don't we? We've got downtown Wi-Fi.
This is at the operations center.
If that could somehow...
I mean, it's not something we really have to deal with today, tonight, but it's just, I think that would be a good thing to have, whether Fripp Island people were showing up or not. There would be some great advantage to it. I don't think it would be... I mean, I don't know all the technical side of it, but I wouldn't think... It wasn't hard to set up in my house.
Okay. All right. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously.
So you say if you could do it, anybody could do it?
Yeah.
Item four is approval.
I won't go there.
Approval of unfreeze employee positions.
We have a few positions before you tonight that we'd like to unfreeze that we feel are important. First one is a school crossing guard. That's really critical. We have some public safety cadets. It says one vacancy. That really should be four. I misread the memo that public safety gave me. And then at Parks, Recreation, and Tourism, we have a couple of facility assistants. Those are the ones that are typically at the front desk at Smith Hazel, Odell Weeks. And so for your consideration, these are all part-time positions. So we'd like your approval to open up and to unfreeze these part-time positions in public safety and Parks and Recreation.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move.
Okay. Discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 5, approval to promote employees in engineering and utilities department.
Yeah. And I was unclear what you all wanted. But I think it was the August meeting. We brought before you some fairly higher level positions for promotion at public safety. These are more lower end, going from maintenance worker 1 to a 2 and 2 to a 3. And so if you want to look at these in the future, we certainly can. And if you want to approve this tonight, we certainly can. But I just need clarification from you as to what level you'd like to see the unfreezing of promotions. And if you want all of them, then here's some tonight for you review.
What was the thought?
I didn't even, I guess I was a little bit unaware about, we had the freeze on hiring of new positions, and then it came up on promotions, and so again, I was uncertain as to what level you'd like to see on promotions. So again, I'm looking for direction from council tonight. Again, these are lower end, and we'd like to do these as quickly as possible. We're going to be making a presentation to you hopefully during the budget process concerning employees and bringing our employees. Currently right now, it takes many years to get to a mid-level for our employees. Our range is tremendous. We have some ranges where employees within those ranges make way more than double an entry position. And those ranges need to be narrowed, and we're going to be bringing that to you. And with that, we've looked at different models. For those that are familiar with North Augusta's model, within about a three-year period of time, you get to the mid-level, and then you're basically, you don't, the number of promotions or the amount of being able to increase is very limited. But again, we'll be bringing that model to you and making those changes. Tonight, I'm just asking, what do you want for as far as promotions? And if you want them all, that's fine. We have some for you tonight.
Mr. Mayor, there's a number of things that we initiated. A couple of us sitting at this side of the table over here, because of some issues that were going on. So it was to a couple of things. One, as you well know, in the past we had some issues with terminations and how they were treated versus using our procedures or not using our procedures. There were some feelings when we'd get the report from our director of employee relations there that just didn't seem right. And I think once we get this straightened out, and one of the things that Mr. Ledoux mentioned is to get our, I use the word salary curves or whatever term you want. Mm-hmm. We would hope by the time we get a new city manager, all this is ironed out and we would not have this type of, I'm going to use the word restriction. We have some in CPST and we put some others in, like a $10,000 limit on professional services. Mm-hmm. And I won't mention, you know, a thousand times that number that was used, but we did some of those things that hopefully we don't need in the future. And so that was the position for a lot of these. And obviously we had council support at the time to do them. And if they're, at some point they do need to come off, and that's in relation for sure by the time a city manager gets here. And Mr. Ledoux is working on a lot of these to get them to where there is a procedure. We do have salary models where that you don't hire in a new employee and they make more than their supervisor and these kind of things. So that's what these are all for, is to kind of get that issue taken care of. And that's my thoughts on it.
Well, how does that affect this particular item?
Yes. Well, I guess
move ahead with it to give the ability to do some of these things.
Yeah,
if we need to. So we'll come back to council anyway.
If I can add, this is an interim measure, quite frankly. I mean, normally I would not. I disagree with the capital projects. I think council should stay very much involved in capital project spending. But under the normal scheme, this is minutia for council to get involved in. But I think we need to stay with it until we finish this budget process,
right,
and we get a better handle on it.
Sure. And so, that's where I am.
So what do you want to do tonight?
I would approve these.
Okay.
Okay.
And the question is, in the future, when we are ready to make a promotion, do you want all the promotion to come back to council? No matter what the promotion is?
Certain levels.
Or certain levels.
Think certain levels. You don't want everything to...
I think at this point we have a more dependable process than we had.
I would say a supervisory level and above.
Okay.
I
have no problem with that.
You know, maintenance level 1 to maintenance level 2 or, yeah, you know, PSO 1 to PSO 2, but...
Yeah, and I would like to see it when the new city manager comes, that trust relationship is developed so that these types of things don't have to come back
absolutely
to council at all.
And that's the intent for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does this second paragraph, is that going to be affected?
Second paragraph here?
Yes.
again, we're just reclassifying.
Reclassification, is that a salary increase as well?
No, there would not be a salary increase affected here.
A different level? Or is it just a title, or is it a different level?
Description.
It's more of a description as to what they're doing. And
George has a comment.
Did you get your...
This is an increase, one step as far as a technician goes, because this is a higher performance. So it was my intention to include a salary advance for the individual who's doing this, because this is, well, in effect, this person is doing this work, and it's really a question of equity. They're doing the work, they should get the pay.
Is there some reason we didn't state the salary in this from maintenance one to maintenance two, so that for the record we could have what these folks are leaving from the current position to the current pay? I know you gave us a spreadsheet sometime.
Are you talking about what salary they're going from what to what?
Right.
There's generally at least, what, 5% between grades? You know, more or less. It's and so they're going from a maintenance worker 1, 5%, and I think they're starting off at around 21,000. Again, that's why I'm saying these, you know, as Dick was saying, if it's supervisor and above, we could bring it to you. If it's below that, then we can make those up. Because I like to see these things automatically, if all possible, because these need to be raised up.
They should be automatic. There should be an automatic scale within 6 months of automatic progression with the salary. And I think we're micromanaging. We try to get into trying to tell you when to move from maintenance one to maintenance two, and a progression if a person's work performance has been satisfactory. So,
George, does the salary increase come with all four of these? I think there are four missing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was in the budget. I had anticipated that these would happen in this coming year, and it is still in the approved budget, so my financials are good.
And I'll just simply inject, George just on the side told me who we were talking about, and the person for this increase in description and pay from drafting technician to engineering technician or whatever, that's definitely a case of that person already doing more than the old.
Been with the city over 20 years.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. I'll pass this. Item six.
Last item on the agenda is we talked extensively at the June meeting when council approved the budget that we wanted to get back and relook at the budget so that hopefully when the new city manager comes in, the foundation of expenditures and revenues as to where the city needs to go and what you would like could be dealt with, and they wouldn't have to deal with that at that point in time. We're taking on all the hard things now, so it'd make it much easier for that person, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to, number one, have a meeting next Monday night. We could do it 5:30. We could bring some sandwiches, meet for 2 or 3 hours. We could decide at that time how you want to proceed with the budget, or we could go ahead and discuss that tonight, how you want to proceed. Again, there's really two ways of doing it, the way we've been doing it, which is annually looking at the revenue, annually looking at the expenditures, making whatever adjustments are necessary so that you have a balanced budget. The other way is what we looked at back in 2010 for those that were on council at the time, and we started getting involved in a zero-based budgeting where you really look at thinking that you have a city that has no departments, no services whatsoever, and you start structuring and building from that point as to what you would like to see within the city. One obviously takes more time than the other, and it's going to be really up to council how you'd like to proceed with this. Either way, we'd like to meet next Monday, get the process started. If you want to decide tonight how you want to do that, that's fine, or we could discuss it in more depth on the 29th. Now, I also want to say that at the last council meeting, you also talked about an issue concerning Woodside and some storm debris, and we need to get that settled. We believe that by next week we'll have the necessary information. At the meeting you had, we discussed having a committee get together and talking about it, kind of looking at the various options that might be available. We'd like to do that next week, either next. So this is Monday for the budget. We'd like to either Tuesday or Wednesday around the same time talk about Woodside and try to resolve that issue. Obviously, the longer it's out there and it's unresolved, the more it keeps coming up, and we just need to get that settled, just like we have done so far on many of these other issues.
Great.
So I'd like to meet Monday on the 29th, 5 or 5:30, whichever is a good time. So let's talk about that first. 29th, okay?
Yes.
5, 5:30.
What time? 5?
5:30 is what Gail would prefer because she works.
5:30.
Okay, 5:30 on the budget. Would you want to talk about it now, or you want to wait till the 29th and talk about it?
I got one question, though. The last meeting, we were talking about this, I don't know what to call it, an excess reimbursement or whatever, and that was already woven into our budget from last year?
But as you recall, with FEMA, we had a shortfall in this last budget year. We actually had a deficit. When I looked at the budgets for the past 10 years and looked at how much we had at the end of the year, we had averaged $505,000 in overage, or we had more revenue than we had expenditure. So this is the first time in that I can remember. I became city manager in 98, and we always had an excess. So this is the first year, and it was all because of the storm debris and the cleanup, the overtime, the equipment expenditures. So this next budget, we know we were going to get more money in from FEMA because of when the payments were going to be made.
It's not going to cure next year, but it'll help.
It helped us balance the budget so we didn't have to go ahead and take as much from reserves. So that's one of the things we'll be talking about, is the fact that right now, this year's budget, and in reality the last couple of years' budget, we were using reserve money on the back of the budget just to balance it. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. I mean, you could do it for a year or two when you have some tough times, but you can't continue that process. So that's the major thing we'll be talking about, is, okay, we know we have a deficit. How do we cut expenditures? How do we raise revenues? Or a combination thereof.
Well, I think one thing we need to really do, and Mr. Ledoux and I have talked about it, we need to really see what money comes in now, because we have some grants and we have the FEMA money and we have a number of extraneous things that are not necessarily annual incomes. And if we look at really what the citizens put into the pot every year, and then see what that does, because we count our loans in there, we count a lot of the stuff in there as part of our budget. And we need to get down to what is basically does the taxpayers put into the till every year, and then we say, okay, all of this other is extraneous stuff that goes on outside of that.
Yeah.
Because out of the $49 million this year, it's pretty easy to take out $3-4 million quickly with projects we've authorized and so forth and so on, well, via loans or grants. So I think that's what we need to get in that type of detail when we start on the budget.
I would agree, and I would add, this is my seventh year on council. It's been a challenge each year to get a comfortable handle on the finances of Arizona City, but and we all learned quite a bit, those of us that are still on council in 2010 with that exercise, but we learned really what made the budget. I certainly would support a zero-based budgeting process and a study of the revenues. We're facing more challenges ahead. The infrastructure is still not helping. We're still getting leaks. We're still getting issues with public services, with equipment wearing out, with engineering and utilities and their workload, public safety and their workload. So I would encourage us to do a zero-based budgeting. If someone is not comfortable, perhaps we could try it with one department and see whether or not that seems to work. And I wouldn't spare any department in what we did. I mean, my sense of what we should do.
Dick, what were our real findings after we've done that zero-based budgeting?
It wasn't zero-based budgeting, and that was the issue. There was a case, and I still have the book. I'm telling you, that sucker is that thick.
Tell me the important stuff.
we got access to everything, and it was an eye-opener. I think we ended up increasing our budget, as a matter of fact, despite the goal of not doing that, because we discovered some issues that, you know, weren't addressed and needed to be addressed. So, I mean, it's a two-way street. But our citizens are scrubbed their budgets down, and I don't see anything wrong with us doing it as well. We're getting awfully close to running out of money, and I'd hate to ever think of going to the public asking for more money without being able to look them in the face and say we did the best, we took a hard look at what we're doing, and we feel we've cut where we had to.
Well, we're not going to run out of money. That term bothers me a little bit when we say we're running out of money for the press and everybody else. Certainly we haven't had a property tax increase in 25 years, and not many people, the cities, have that. Certainly we're short, we're getting shorter on money, but you know what we're doing? We keep adding things to the budget.
That's right.
We talk a good talk about this, and then before you know it, we want to add this, we add something now tonight. I'm not saying it's bad, but now we're going to have video, and that costs money, and there are so many other things that you, if you had time to think about, that we just keep adding this, and after a while it adds up. So I think before we go into this massive thing, and this is going to take 70% or so of Roger's time, I think we ought to look at it really carefully ourselves, get in there and talk about it and look and think, what can we take out of the budget? What can we reduce that will allow us to have more money in our budget?
Well,
if we can't find anything, then maybe we'll have to do this. But I don't think it ought to be a first resort here. I think it ought to be number two after we do a level best to look at the budget and find. We didn't find anything basically last time. And all those hours and what have you. Dick, I agree with you wholeheartedly that there was an educational value there. It certainly is. And if we could do this, I just thought about it. If we could do this and we could get to the point where we feel relatively comfortable with what our budget is, when we get our new city manager, who knows who it is or where it's coming from or whatever, then perhaps shortly thereafter we might want to sit down and dig into the budget a little bit more. It'd be an education for that person.
Well, I would counter by saying that Roger LaDuke is the best person to guide us through this process since he's been with the city so long.
And I don't doubt that at all. I agree with that.
Let me clarify my comment about running out of money. I didn't intend for it to be taken literally. When I'm talking about running out of money, it's us not being able to do things that need to be done. And we've got limited resources, and the purpose of zero-based budgeting is to ask yourself, do you need this person, do you need that person? And I think in the process, I would hope that we can make some adjustments and more effectively utilize our money.
Well, I'm just not against it until we go sit down and go over the budget ourselves and look at what's in there, because you're talking about hours on hours and hours, and we've got so many things that need to be done. And you know all of them. That
how would you go through the budget, Mr. Mayor, and understand that if we don't, if you're not interested in the zero-based process?
That's my first. That would be my second choice. If we can't, we can sit down with each department and take an hour with each department and say, okay, let's really look at this. What are you doing that could possibly be reduced?
Well, that's all zero-based budget.
Or eliminate.
Mr. Mayor, I think. You know, your idea is great, but what you really need to do is go to each department, find out exactly what their minimum core functions are, and then anything beyond that, you know, maybe you take a look at it. But instead of just saying, well, what are you doing which we can reduce, that's, they're not going to answer anything.
I think each department could tell us within a matter of days, a few days, exactly what you're saying. What is the minimum core that they need?
Yeah.
And then we can come together.
And then we can start looking at it.
I don't think we need to spend hours and days and weeks going through this thing, only to find out that, well, we, as Dick, you said, we did that before, and we added things to it. Or we found out we're adding. So we don't need to do that at that point.
Well, Mr. Mayor, we have 4 years here, pushing five now, that we've taken out of reserves or used grants or something. And the chart that was done by Mr. Ledoux in 2010 went back 25 years, and we had 3 to 8% increase in, if you will, revenue in the city until 2008. And 2008 forward, it's just almost a straight line for the general fund, and it's not straight up, it's horizontal.
I understand that.
And I think we've just been eking along here, hoping things will get better, but I think we're to the point that we got to say, okay, we either close the shortfall or we got to do that proverbial increase somewhere. I think we're really there somewhere anyway.
I think we need to look at other municipalities and look at their revenue base. And I think that we know how some of these towns are doing well, and that's because of, one, their tourism base. If you look at Charleston, 3/4 of their revenue comes from tourism. We have relied so heavily on our tax base. And looking for the tax base to help us with projects. I think we need to look broader than that, beyond the tax base, but what else is out there to help us with these projects to make our community a thriving, a very strong and thriving community. I'm not saying it's not strong now, but we've got to take a different approach in terms of investment and investing in some things in our community.
Well, how do you think we do that?
How do we do that? I'm going to use the word venture capital in terms of investing in some, helping our developers with some of the things that can happen in this town, and that can be done with some incentives.
You know, we're going to have to face things here soon, certainly. As I mentioned earlier, and I know people get tired of hearing it maybe, but we haven't had a property tax increase in 25 years, the millage part. I'm not saying that your taxes don't go up, because they're going up for other reasons as well, the county or the whatever it is. But our millage rate has actually been lowered, if I'm not mistaken, 4 times. Now, you name one other city that you know that's anywhere close to that. I don't think there are any. So we may have to, whether we want to or not, we may have to at some point raise property taxes to get some revenue in. We have strained ourselves, the city, and down to the point where I agree, Reggie, with what you're saying. We're getting to that point, and Dick, that we have used some of our reserve money. We still have some, but we've used some. But you know, if the economy doesn't get any better quicker, then we may have to look at something. And I think when we get in our budget session here next week and whenever, we're going to be talking about that too.
Let me make a suggestion, if you don't mind, because obviously we don't have everybody's on the same page as to where we need to go and what we need to do. How about if next Monday night, I'll just do an overview of some of the revenue and expenditures. I have some ideas on things that I feel we could, again, we just can't look at the short-term approach of how we go ahead and look at how do we raise new revenues or even cut expenditures. And so I have some longer-term, just like I said about the salaries, you know, how if we could go ahead and narrow that gap. It's a long-term, effective way to go ahead and deal with the ever-rising salaries that we have. And I have some other thoughts. But let's discuss this in general, and hopefully coming out of the meeting Monday night after we get all said and done, we'll have some good ideas and consensus as to the direction we need to go. And if that means we go back to the very beginning, which I'm sitting here going, I don't even know why I'm saying this. I'm more than happy to do that with you all. Or we go ahead and just do it over the next two or three meetings. But we're limited. I do want to say this for those that are still here and for the press that's here. Aiken is in an enviable position. We have no general fund debt. No general fund debt. That is unheard of for municipalities. As you all know, I have worked with a number of cities since I left Aiken, and every one of them has debt. We have no, as of January of this year, we'll have no utility debt. That is just totally unheard of. So we're going to be debt-free in the city, and we have, depending again on how you want to look at reserves, again, every city that I've worked with so far, other than Aiken, they don't have a depreciation fund for buildings and computers and equipment and all these other things. I mean, the school board was here just tonight, and they were talking about how in the world are we going to go ahead and pay for these things. We've been paying as we've been going along, and we have this, and I would never want you to ever even consider changing that. But when you add up everything we have, we got over $20 million in reserves. The thing that concerns me, and again, I'm a very conservative individual, is our undesignated reserves, the things that are not designated for buildings and computers and equipment, is going down. And it has gone down over the last several years. And that's why I told you all in June, let's sit back, let's go ahead when things are not so pressing, things are not so emotional, and deal with this at this time. And that's why I want to sit down with you on Monday, and I think we'd have a good discussion. Let us bring a few things to you, and based on what we talk about Monday, then we can decide which direction we want to go, if that's okay. 5:30 on Monday night.
Yeah. One of the things, Reggie, if you don't mind, let me just say this real loud. One of the things that Reggie said to me a week or two ago, we were having some general discussion. He said, "Leslie, we have horizons." You remember that discussion?
Yeah, that doesn't accomplish a whole lot
sometimes. And horizons, in his opinion, if you don't mind my quoting you, is to plan for the future.
That's correct.
And he has not seen evidence of that. We get together every year and we have this discussion. We look at the budget. But what are we doing in terms of real forward-thinking plans for growth for the future? And that's what we need, is real work sessions. We have concrete plans. And you can't do that overnight in terms of coming together and saying and throwing out some things on a chart and saying this is goal, priority one list and priority two. But it really takes some deep conversation and discussion as to where we want to go with the plans for the future for this town. So I appreciate that discussion, Richard.
Yeah, you know, I looked at a horizons meeting as you're looking over the horizons, and we basically cover what we have done, which you may need to do. But in Reggie's opinion, having lived here before in the 80s and looking what has happened at Savannah River, which has been our key source of income, there's nothing tells you in the next 3 to 5 years that anything is going to change in Aiken, our real estate markets or whatever. And I think we have to go back and build on what was done in the mid-90s when we said, hey, we need to take this piece of town, and we did this, downtown Aiken and that. Okay, what is the next thing on the horizon that we haven't even thought about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got resources in town. You know, I support what the Chamber does. They've done a lot of work in the last couple of, just in the last year, that's really, I think, awakened a lot of people to say, hey, we do have a problem. And one of them is the school board, as we heard. But there's some other issues. I won't say issues, but we need to be thinking, what can we do to get these people in here? Right across the street over here, the mill, promoting another one of those developments, and as far as I know, Katie's almost sold out over there. Sold out, rented out.
One unit left.
She's going to be looking for something else.
Yep.
And I've tried to sell her this building, but she wouldn't buy it. And so, but I think but that's where we need to go is, right. is think those things. And, you know, I've said, hey, well, we move our staff downstairs, but, you know, maybe it comes up and say, gee, we can get a whole lot more return if somebody leases those out and we put staff somewhere else. I think that's the level. And I do agree with Mr. Ledoux. We only have one or two internal loans that we will clear up by the end of the year. A good one to look at is a water and sewer fund that Mr. Ledoux has already mentioned. We'll have, after December of this year, we'll have roughly $85,000 a month that can go towards the things that we need to do. But we need to go along with what Mr. Grinton has planned out for us and say, where do we spend that money? Just not say, oh, gee, we need another water tank. But what is the best for the city? To me, that's a horizon type thing. Mm-hmm. So that's a, and I think we could even use the water and sewer fund at our Monday meeting to say, here comes $85,000 a month. We got a loan to pay off, but we know when that'll pay off. How do we use that money effectively to enhance the city? And that's water and sewer now, so that's something that doesn't show very much, but it needs worked on. So that's a thought process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Monday night, 5:30. When do we want to do the Woodside discussion? Tuesday or Wednesday? Does it matter?
Wednesday.
Wednesday, let's do it at 4:30.
What are we proposing to get there?
Staff will sit down with a committee of council members, whoever shows up, and talk about what we found, the different options that might be available to you.
So that's October 1st at 4, did you say?
Yes. I'll send you out a memo.
That's not a good day for me.
What did you say, Dave?
Did he say 4 o'clock or 4:30?
4:30.
I said 4 or 4:30. I heard 4 o'clock.
I can go either way. And
now, remember, from the last meeting we had, it said that several of us would get with city staff and Woodside people and work on
it. My understanding is you've done that with staff. So.
And we have another little get-together tomorrow that would put that proposal together.
So we'll have plenty of time by next Wednesday to get all the facts.
Okay.
So is that,
I would like to, by the way, I'd like the facts to be, we all agree to them, and the right numbers would be very helpful. Some of the numbers that show up in different places are not exactly the same as I hear in different places.
4 o'clock.
I have a function that evening. 4 o'clock would work well with me.
Okay.
When are we going to get an update from Glenn on his activities?
I was waiting to give an update on all the projects. I'd really like to sit down with council at some point, either in a work session ahead of time or something. When I came back in June, we probably had about 25 construction projects or projects that were either under design or getting ready to be designed that needs to be done. And I really would like to sit down with council on, even though I've given you some status reports on these projects, to sit back with council and say, hey, we're stopping this project, we're moving ahead with this project. And so you could ask some questions, and then I could at least get some response from you to make sure we're all going in the same direction. As far as Glenn is concerned, again, I was waiting for this meeting tonight and to get through some of these highway projects before I came back on that.
Okay. What's the time for the Woodside meeting?
4 o'clock, October 1st.
Roger, with Tool Hill, I'd like for us to look over the design plan that Richard had, see what works and what doesn't work. Let's get something moving within the next month with that off of the Ed Center.
Yeah. Yeah. My goal is before I depart from this job.
Please, Ryan.
have something
like next March. A lot of proposals here.
Or April. And just again, council, remember we have a meeting this Thursday to talk about the city manager position at 5 o'clock.
Okay, now, council, we finished this meeting, but we need to go into executive session to discuss a contractual matter concerning the SIB. Yeah, so
Do we have a motion and a second to do that?
I so move.
Second.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimous. Okay. Thank you.
What time is the Thursday night meeting?
5:00. City manager.
Probably had to drop in, but I just thought we'd lose on the list.
Why?
You did? I told you you would do.
I can.
Well,
tell me what I need to do.
Tell him to remember how he landed.
Listen, that's number one on my list.
That, I want to make sure.
That's the matter. I have to call you.
Every time you have done this.
I always ask. I remember where my mother lives. It all exists very well.
Dave,
give me a number.
285. Better on the number.
Okay.
I'm more persistent on budget.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you. Oh, never mind.
Hello.
This is the name and contact information. See if you can read that email address. SC Barb and Dave.
She didn't pass.
No, that's the guy recommended tonight for the park commission. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Are you all
doing? I am so sorry. I gave you all these information.
What role will we reduce the budget? Hey, let's vote it to the 9,000.
Are you fine?
Yourself?
So what was this now?
We want you to be
good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Boss Sarah.
Dave. I'm a city councilman. I think we need to go into executive session. I'll call you back. All right. What is she smiling about?
My mom just likes
to talk to me. All
right. Go ahead, boy. Here I am.
We're going to give you all pencil, number 2 lead, fill in all the blanks. This is for Thursday night. This is not for what we're going to be talking about. This is for Thursday night. And you're subdivided into 5 or less, 5 or more. We're starting to get something here.
Thank you.